What is up, everybody? This is the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Rock Spotlight's mission is to connect others through an educational podcast. Each episode will highlight someone from Rochester, New York, in the health and wellness space who is thinking outside of the box, providing exceptional products and or services, and is elevating our community. Make sure to stay tuned after the podcast for more information on my practice, on my approach to healing, and a little bit more about myself. Thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, and today we'll be talking about the science of laughter. I guess this is where I'm supposed to say some corny dad joke, so I will. I tried to tell a joke the other day about a toilet, but it tanked. That's all I got for you guys right now. I may put a couple more jokes in throughout this podcast, but don't worry. Today's not all about jokes. It's more about understanding what laughter is and why it is so healthy. What better time than now to have this conversation? We're cooped up, we're worried, anxious, and probably not laughing enough. I have France McCloskey on the podcast, who is an instructor specializing in the field of brain health and human connection. So with that, let's introduce France. France is an edutainer and has been developing curriculum and providing training workshops throughout her career in the human service field for over 20 years. Her passion is to create knowledge from research and determine how to apply it to change behavior, resulting in an improvement in quality of life and longevity. Recently, she has brought to the community her combined talent in teaching and expertise in brain health and human connection. Beginning in 2017, she developed a variety of workshop programs to teach people brain fitness and social skills to develop meaningful connections. France has an MA in adult learning and a BA in social sciences interdisciplinary, cognitive science, double major in psychology, and is a certified brain injury specialist trainer. So without further ado, welcome, France.
Hi, thank you for having me.
The pleasure is all mine. So let's dive
in. It's a mouthful. Go ahead.
Let's talk about laughter here. So tell us a little bit more about your background and how you got into this career.
So I, as you had mentioned, I worked in the human service field for many years, and I've always had an overlap between education and human services, sort of a providing those basically services to people who maybe have more challenges. And so about 3 years ago, I needed to make a change in my life for my own longevity and my own stress levels. And so I left that job without a plan in place. But within a week, I had the idea that I was going to branch out and develop my business and just teach adults. And my focus at first was to teach social skills to help younger or youth, people between the ages of 18 and 25 or going up to 30, people transitioning into adulthood, with how to successfully develop meaningful relationships with people. And then it just kind of fell on my lap because I was always talking about brain fitness and how to help keep your brain healthy and those things that you can do. And so somebody said, hey, would you mind talking to what we would call older adults, people maybe 55 or 60 and over, on how to improve their cognitive health to make their lives richer and as far as preserving any sort of mental capacity that they have as far as moving forward. And so I kind of fell into that, and I've been able to develop all these different types of workshops, and it's one of my creative outlets. And so laughter in the brain, we had a workshop planned and then it was canceled, but we will be doing it in the future. So it's just a fun topic to talk about. And it's something that I have brought into when I was more of a human service provider, brought in some of the theories and concepts behind what laughter is into some of the work that I've done.
And that's how we've kind of met. I saw your name and your course that you were supposed to offer. I think it was the Penfield Community Center. And I read the title and I said, I need to meet this lady. So here we are. And I love the term brain fitness. I think that's, I'm going to steal that term or borrow that term if you're okay with that. Because
I'm totally fine with that.
When we think of fitness, we think of the body, not the brain. Mm-hmm. So important.
So yes, and that's something that has even the idea of the brain versus the body. Like, you know, I'm somebody, I'm very neuroscience minded. I'm very hard science kind of, but I do definitely delve into the soft sciences or the social sciences. And one of the things that I sort of came to my own conclusion, it's sort of what's true to me, is that we're analogous beings. We're not segmented. We're not, it's not brain and body. It's not mind and body. It's all together. So if your mind's unhealthy, then you're unhealthy. If your emotional spirit's unhealthy, even if you're the most physically fit person in the world, you're not healthy. And so I find that all of it's important. And it's not just important because I think that, it's because when you're physically fit, it helps your mind. Sure. And then you have to kind of work on all of it to be healthy as a whole. So, I think brain fitness definitely falls within the overall fitness.
And you see visual changes when you start to work out and build muscle, but you don't see that cognitively in your brain. You might feel it in other ways, but you don't see it. So I think it's hard for us to wrap our minds around that, but super important. So what is the definition of laughter?
So that was a tough one. And I love that question. And I actually had to just look it up. So I just looked it up and I get it from the very, credible source called the dictionary. And so essentially they have it defined as make the spontaneous sounds, and it's the movement of the face and body and the instinctive expressions of lively amusement, and sometimes also contempt or derision, which that definition just made me laugh. But essentially, laughter is a physical thing, and they kind of define it in the research, which I was really digging in, there is very little research on laughter itself and that sort of action. And so essentially it's defined as like your rib cage making this utterance sound. It's actually a vocalization. It's a form of language.
Interesting. Why is it therapeutic for our brains?
So what the research is suggesting is that it helps relieve stress. And some of the stuff we know, we just feel good after. And part of that's because it does help our brain to release endorphins. So it gives us sort of that happy, I can't think of the word, neurotransmitters. So that the chemical that creates happiness, it does reach our reward center. So it makes us feel good. But overall, in a way of, it does make you healthier. And in some of the research, it shows that it can help reduce inflammation, which they're finding as of recent years, that is such a, inflammation is such a key factor to disease and things that people are having to deal with, as such as diseases of the aging. It can even accelerate aging is what they're seeing. So what they found is laughter helps to reduce inflammation, and it can also help you boost the immune system. So studies have shown that people actually are healthier after they're better at fighting off disease once they are going through some sort of laughter type of experience.
I would say super important right now, going through this pandemic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Function. So how often should we laugh?
So I think that's like, that depends. Yeah. And so we have to think about, so the other thing that laughter does that we will, I think, delve in with some of the questions, so if we cover it, but laughter is an utterance that we have in our communication and our interactions. So often when people talk about laughter, they'll start talking about humor and what makes us laugh, and versus what the actual part of laughter. So I started, so if anybody wants to go out and search more, and that's what I'm about, is like, if I give you something to kind of hang on to and you want to go and explore more, it's wonderful. So Sophie Scott with the University College of London, a neuroscience department, she is amazing at explaining all of these sort of things with laughter. And so what she has discovered, because she was more into the speech aspect of research with brain science, and she discovered that laughter wasn't researched. And then people were even questioning it, because even when we looked at these universal emotions, they were all these negative emotions. And then when she came upon laughter, she's like, yeah, what's its purpose? And then it's important to study, because if things are going well, you want to know what's working well as much as you want to know what's not working well. So it's these ways to connect with each other. And what we have found is social connection also is very healthy. The answer to a healthy life and a long life, there was a study done, I believe, through Harvard, is meaningful relationships. And so laughter is a way that we connect with each other. So my thing is if we're right now pretty hindered in really connecting with one another, but if we're laughing, it's a way to connect with each other over, whether it's Zoom or over the phone. It's much more effective if there's face-to-face type of thing. So it doesn't necessarily mean in person, but there's more information and cues along with the laughter and conversation. It's not so much about being funny. What they found is that we laugh more in a conversation than we think we do, and we do it to show some sort of solidarity, or that we understand, or that we like somebody. I mean, when I was listening to this researcher talk about it, I was thinking, of course, when people are flirting, like, what happens in that conversation? Like, usually there's like a slight giggle and like, oh, she's liking what I'm saying. And then there's a ha ha ha, and oh my God, he's really funny and it's attractive. And so I always come up with like these real world things when I start thinking about the science and go, oh yeah, that seems to be really true. And even in the conversation with you, like there was a few times where I sort of giggled and laughed. So it's a way that we connect, and you just acknowledged, you know, oh yeah, I kind of agree with that, even though that's not what you said.
Well, I'm laughing right now because I'm realizing how analytical my brain is and how linear my questions are. It's just like, how often should we laugh? Like, that just totally depends, but yeah, that's my brain. So I'm going to laugh it off.
I'm analytical too, so I can roll right with you.
Yeah, this is good. So just to touch on a couple points you've already made, physiologically, I think what you were looking for was dopamine, the neurotransmitter, and maybe serotonin. I'm assuming those two would be secreted.
Yes, thank you. Okay. And it's also the endorphins that kind of get released too, so I can't remember what that is, but yes, thank you.
Maybe epinephrine or norepinephrine.
Yeah.
And then you're right, though. It feels good to laugh. It's like deep in our bones, like in our ribcage, like you said, the vibration, like it just feels good physiologically. And then we take it a step further, and you're right, emotionally, that connectedness helps us to make memories, and it just feels good across the board.
Right.
So is laughter a genetic trait, a learned behavior, or is it a combination?
So based on the research, like initially I was thinking, well, of course it would be genetic in some ways. Like there seems to be a natural piece to it. But as I was digging in, so laughter is not unique to human beings. It's unique to all mammals. And so this researcher even talks about how some may argue that rats laugh. And if you slow down the sound that they make when you tickle them. And so this researcher has discovered at about 6 weeks to 4 weeks to about 2 months old for human beings that they'll smile and you'll kind of have that back and forth. But you have to tickle a baby to get them to laugh, to get that response where the rib cage will sort of make this the sound of laughter, whatever that may sound like. And so that's the baby's first experience to see the reaction of an adult. I mean, most people would agree when you hear a baby laughing, it's like unicorns and rainbows and butterflies are shooting out of their body. And we cannot not laugh. And it's a contagion. So I love the word that she used. It's a contagious factor. And so in her research, Sophie Scott, she even said that you can see in brain imaging that when somebody goes to tickle or to be tickled, that the brain will start to get ready to laugh. And so there's this anticipatory factor. And so she talked about how with the rat study, somebody in the United States, I can't remember the researcher, but was tickling rats. They slowed it way down. And so they had the same person come in and tickle the rat, and they measured the brain waves, and the rat was getting ready to laugh as the tickler was coming in. And she kind of makes a joke, like, what a great job that is to be a rat tickler. And then the rat likes you. You have a rat that actually is anticipating. And then all mammals, what they say is universal amongst all mammals is play, and laughter is a huge part of play. And then it can communicate, like, there's no danger here. So even if, and this is generalities, of course, you know, I always think of the dark side of things too. I have a very dark sense of humor. I'm very irreverent. I use it in all my classes. I actually have to give a warning. I'm like, just so you know, I'm irreverent. And I actually had somebody say in one of my presentations, say, oh, so she can marry us too. And then I didn't pick up on what that meant. And then somebody else had said something, and I'm like, no, I'm not a reverend. I'm a reverend. So there is a great piece of humor in all of that. But going back to the idea of mammals and play and this way of kind of communicating that even if things get a little bit aggressive, like among siblings or whatever, if there's laughter involved, it may mean there's no threat. Somebody posed a question of, is it a way to conserve energy? So like if somebody falls and they're laughing, then you know there's not any sort of injury. And so then you can just keep walking and you don't need to help them because they're okay. Although I've known people to laugh and they might have a broken part of their body, and I laugh when I get hurt. So it's not always accurate with that communication. I laugh at everything. I think most things are funny, and I can't be serious more than 5 minutes. So going back to your question of how often should you laugh? If you're around me, it's like, you know, some people may think I have a problem. I don't know. I actually have to work not to laugh, especially in those more serious situations.
You're in the right field.
Yeah.
I want to be an animal tickler. How do they tickle? Do they use their fingers? Is it like a probe?
No, they use their little fingers. They have a gloved hand, and they come in and they tickle the animal in the same spots that are ticklish for us. And you can't tickle yourself because it's an interactive activity. It's a social activity. It requires a two-way communication there. And interestingly enough, for me anyway, is that that's how I kind of got interested in this topic. Maybe 15 years ago, I read an article in Scientific American Mind about Tickle Me Elmo. And the author was saying he wanted to research because his young child had Tickle Me Elmo. And he thought, you know, what's the purpose of laughter? And I don't really know. And then I actually brought it to my practice of what I did, because I was an independent living skills trainer back then. And I worked with a young woman who was fairly didn't have a lot of voluntary movement. She didn't have any sort of ability to talk. And I was training her staff on how to work with her and keep her cognitively engaged. And I worked with her for like 10 years and more so her staff than I did with her. And I realized about 2 or 3 years in, like, there wasn't a lot of laughter in the experiences, and she couldn't really initiate that. So I explained it to her family. I explained it to the staff, and they all really said, oh yeah, it's kind of somber. I mean, she lived in her home. We were trying to make her environment actively engaging. And I'm like, you know, we should bring more humor and laughter into this experience for her so that she can feel socially connected with those around her.
Mm-hmm. So I struggle myself laughing. I know I do. So I don't know if that's genetic. I know my wife wishes that I laugh more, and I do too. I almost think like that's a weakness of mine. So can I work on that? I mean, are these behaviors that I can change? Is this what you teach in some of your workshops?
So that you need to laugh more, or that you need to laugh less?
So me personally, I need to laugh more.
Okay.
I'm definitely more serious of a person.
So all of the stuff that I suggest to people, I say, you know, we all have our different baselines in what we do. So if you feel like you need to laugh more, then that's something that you could change. It is a behavior. It is a learned behavior. But of course, it's learned from a very young age. So, and what we find to be funny is very different. And so this researcher that I looked into, she even said that a lot of times when people are studying laughter, they are not looking at humor. Because it's so variable, and what you may find funny, I may not find funny. And then she actually made a joke, like, if you find this one thing funny, somebody's brother also always died from whatever that was. There's always somebody who can be sort of offended by it. But as far as doing more laughter in your life and kind of bringing it into there, there are methods that you could do, like more formal ways, or you could try something informally. Now, I will say this. I tend to be resistant sometimes to those things that do make me healthy, like going and walking outside. Like I will get wrapped up in stuff and I have to make a mindful, extra concerted effort to do that. And I realized that about 3 years ago, instead of adding something into my life, I might need to remove something to make room for it, because I'm actually 50 years old. I have no shame in saying that. And so I have a lot going on in my world. And so to add something in almost would be like defeating versus going, okay, I'm going to schedule this one thing in. So yes, you could change that, but probably by interacting with somebody else who does laugh more will cause you to laugh. We as human beings, as mammals who are social, if you believe in the concept of mirror neurons and mirror systems within the brain, which is a controversial topic right now, but it's where we mirror other people. So if you're around people who laugh, you most likely will laugh more. We do laugh more in the presence of others. I think we're 30% are 30 times more likely to laugh in the presence of other people. If you're around somebody who's kind of a laugher, you may wind up laughing and even hearing laughter. So I was questioning, should we play like different types of laugh? So we have what they found so far is like two different types of laughs. One is like one that's like that, that belly, like you cannot control yourself laughter. And it's like almost animalistic. And then the other type is like the kind of like, they call it a forced laugh, but it's not a fake laugh. It's a communication. It's a laugh that shows, you know, different types of things. Like what I said, like showing understanding or solidarity, but it's not like that out of control. Like you cannot maintain your composure type of laughing, but I think you could. I'm pretty confident you could, if you're in the presence of others that are laughing at things that ultimately you may laugh more. And you need, and then maybe you're just not, don't have that luxury. I mean, you can, I just gave you permission to blame your wife, didn't I? You could be like, if you were laughing more, then I would be laughing more. I have this theory. It's not like overly scientific sounding, and I find it pretty silly, but I like it. So I'm going to share it. It's my theory. I'm very Irish, British background descent type person. So I have freckles and I have very pale, fair skin. So when I go outside in the sun, I have like reddish skin with a lot of freckles. Like I get more freckles. So people will think I'm tan and I'm like, no, I'm not really tan. I'm just freckled with some fair skin. And so a couple of years ago, there is a course. I worked with a program at Penfield Rec where I had people go through this course on Coursera called The Science of Well-Being, and it's a happiness course. And this is where some of the information I got about laughter and being happy and social connection comes into play. And they were talking about, if you have your life filled with longing, like I can't wait for COVID-19 to be done. Once this is over, once I lose 5 pounds, I'll be happier. Once I lose 100 pounds, I'll be happier. If I just had someone else in my life, I would be happier. If I could just see my friends, that's like a life of longing. But if you shift it and you create these moments of joy, like freckles on my skin, and you purposely input these moments of joy and moments of laughter in your life, then you will have more laughter. So if you have more freckles, you'll look tan. If you have more moments of joy and peace, you're still going to have the in-between down times. And I think those are just as necessary, in my opinion. I feel like it gives that balance. I think, you know, this is a somber time. There's some pretty serious stuff we're working through. And so it's nothing's wrong with creating the joy in your life too, so that you have that balance. And I think you have to deal with the emotion. I'm not saying mask your sadness, your somber, work through the pain, work through any sort of loss people may be dealing with, but it's okay to feel the other way and have the balance in it.
Gotcha. So what I'm going to take away from what you just shared there, you shared a lot of really good stuff, was behaviors are going to be harder to change, no matter it's nutrition, fitness, laughing more, the older we get. Mm-hmm. So what better time to start than now to start working on it? You need to be mindful. You need to be aware, too, of different opportunities. And I think most importantly, your environment. Mm-hmm. You know, what do they say? We're the average of the five people we hang out with most. Mm-hmm. And that's in any aspect of life. So if you want to laugh more, get some fun of your friends, I guess.
Yeah. It's, I don't want anybody to get divorced over this, I'm telling you.
Yeah. I'm gonna go tickle my 9-month-old though. You're right. There is not a better sight and experience you can have, I don't think, than just watching an infant laugh like that. It's awesome. Okay, so let's keep going here. You've already touched on this briefly, but what is the correlation between laughter and human connection?
So as I mentioned, it's sort of that way that you're showing people that you understand them, that you imagine when you laugh and no one else laughs and that feeling of disconnection you have. And then imagine those people that you do laugh with. Maybe you don't laugh a lot, Matt, but maybe your friend does, but you really like being with them. And, you know,
all of the dad jokes then, right?
Yeah. Yeah, your dad jokes sound awesome. But laughter can be a form of disconnection too. You have to be a little bit careful because nobody likes to be laughed at. So if you're not part of the joke, then it actually will show that sort of social order. Like all conversations show a solidarity and an equality factor to it. And I don't know if people realize that. And there's an element of power in every conversation. So when there's laughter, that has an aspect of showing solidarity. Like I'm with you, I'm showing understanding. Like there's certainly times where I've laughed at things that I know somebody was trying to be funny, but they weren't funny, but I wanted to make them feel accepted. So there's a huge connection there. There's still a lot of research that needs to be done on it. And I think that the theory that laughter is one of those factors that help us connect as social animals is pretty solid, but there's still a lot more research to be done.
So neurologically here, let's talk about the brain. What parts of the brain are highly active during laughter?
So some of the areas are motor areas and sort of the motor areas that deal with anticipating physical actions. So I have like some technical terms, but like the prefrontal gyrus, blah, 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 but it doesn't really matter. It's like the frontal lobe, the amygdala, which is the emotion center, the limbic system, and then which is part of the limbic system, and then the hippocampus, which deals with memory. So it's a certain type of memory. It's our episodic memory, which is the memory that we have that sort of has a time, plays out like a TV show. So there's many different types of memory, and this is just one type. But when we talk about memory, we talk about episodic memory. We don't talk about skill memory per se. We don't talk about semantic memory necessarily. So the hippocampus is the area of the brain that shows takes long-term memories or short-term memories and put them into long-term memory stores. And they're figuring out that emotions in general contribute to an activation in the hippocampus, but laughter is definitely one of those. And it would make sense why that would be. It's very hard to research because who wants to be a part of the study that like, I'm going to, you know, give you some crappy information and you're going to believe it. And then let's see what your hippocampus does. Like you can't just study human beings like that without maybe leaving some negative footprint. And so those are the areas that they, and the pleasure centers are involved too. So those reward centers that we get.
So when I think of the amygdala, the fear center, I think of, anger and fear. Why does that tie into laughter?
So it has, I don't know if the amygdala is just anger and fear. I think it also deals with the positive emotions too. Okay. And as we say, like if you look at the cortex, which in the frontal lobe, we see it as in more advanced mammals or what we call advanced. But it's universal across animals. So it is a lower part of the brain. So other animals have that system, but amygdala is not just the negative emotions too, but we know way more about those because we've researched them more.
Awesome. Great answer. So a few actionable ways to start laughing more. That's what I'm looking for today. And that's what my listeners love to. They just love some actionable things that they can work on today.
So some of the things that I would take away from the research that I looked up, I mean, look into the research. The researcher that does this, she's actually quite funny. To watch those things that you do find humorous. I tend to stay away from like slapstick sort of stuff, but if that's what makes you laugh, or I love Far Side, that sort of thing. But I think the most powerful thing would be is somebody else who does laugh and to try to communicate, try to connect with people. I think if you can find someone's baby laying around and just tickle them, maybe that would work. But try to, or sometimes too, I think this may be even a good idea, is to listen to real different ways people laugh. And then that actually has a contagious factor. Now, I did watch yoga laughter, or there's laughing yoga or something like that. And that one, it's like, I don't know, like if I watch that, I just go, that's really bizarre. But if that makes you laugh, like some people like force laugh, I guess, and that's supposed to have some factors. But I would say, like, do the Zoom or Facebook or whatever it is that you can do where you have the video chat. And then just have a casual conversation, play. That's the other thing, is play. And play is basically defined. I can't think of the specific definition, but play is basically not goal directed. You don't want it to end. It's play for you, not necessarily for someone else. So like if you're playing with your kids, I can't stand Monopoly. My kids are adults now and they know that at this point. But when they were 7, I played with them, but it was not play for me. That was being a mom. So play is fun, and if it provides that laughter for you, so just to kind of have that spirit of fun, not like, oh, you're supposed to be making me laugh, why am I not laughing more? And of course, I love listening to like Wine and Crime podcasts. It's so dark, it's really wrong, but they are laughing all the time throughout the podcast, and so you find those things that bring you joy, that bring you laughter. And I will just say this, from that happiness course, there is something called the WOOP method, W-O-O-P, and that is a method that's been researched in behavior change. And it's nothing overly complicated. It's wish, outcome, obstacle, and plan, and they kind of, you can look it up online and you can see the steps that you can do, and it's supposed to be a very effective method.
Let's talk habits for a second. So you specialize in behaviors. Mm-hmm. So what do they say about making something a habit? Does it take 21 days, 28 days?
So there's a lot of stuff out there, and it's all controversial because it really depends. It depends on how much time you put into it. So again, going back to the WOOP method, I think it's more about having a plan for the obstacles that get in the way of what you originally wanted. So could you do something for 28 days and it becomes a habit? The jury's now out in that, but you definitely want to count every effort you make to changing that habit. So I use an example. I got this from something I saw on TV as far as an author who was promoting their book. And I cannot remember what the name of this book is, but it deals with sort of like the physics of behavior change. But like if you put your shoes on Friday morning because you're going to start walking 150 minutes a week, you count the fact that you put your shoes on even though you didn't go walking that day. And you go, okay, this is where I'm at today. I'm going to try again tomorrow. And then you walk out the door, you walk 10 steps, you count that. And so you actually, I think if you track your efforts towards it, you'll feel a sense of accomplishment, and you don't judge the quality of it per se. You just get into the habit of doing it, and then eventually you can polish your quality of it.
That's discipline. Yeah, that's great. Okay, you touched on people living longer if they laugh more. Mm-hmm. So do you have any studies that you can share?
So there was a study of older adults to show that laughter improved. I don't have any specific that I can point to, do I? I'm just going to quickly look because I had my notes up.
Okay, if you don't, but like, why are people living longer if they laugh? Is it just physiological changes? Is it the connection? Is it a combination?
I think it has to do with the physiological. It has to do with the development of social relationships. They do find socialization helps people to live longer, and whatever that looks for someone. So if they have someone in particular that they have in their lives, if it's just one person. Sometimes people ask me, like, does that mean I need to go out and meet a bunch of people? I'm like, no, if that's not your jam, like you don't want to do anything that's not pleasurable for you, especially if it's some form of social anxiety. But you want to have a meaningful relationship is one of the markers for increasing a quality, longer life. The other one for laughter that can help us with that helps us create that social connection, and going back to those physiological things of boosting the immune system and reducing inflammation, especially in diseases for the aging, dementia, cancer.
It's huge.
Yeah. So I do have.
Forgot about that. Yeah, you're right. You talked about inflammation.
Yeah.
I mean, that suppressing inflammation is huge for across the board. Anything really, it stems from inflammation.
And I think it physically, like if we just wanted to parse it out for a second, physically, it creates that reduction in inflammation because of the, and it deals with your breath too. And you think about breathing, and I'm sure you talk about this with your patients, that breathing is such a, and I have to laugh at this because I've learned so much about mindfulness and breath and how healing oxygen is. And I'm like, well, no kidding. That's what keeps us alive. And I think we undervalue the healing qualities of oxygen. I mean, research is like steadfast in all of that. So laughter, like, is, it can be a disruptor of breathing, but it does do this thing with your breath. And even like certain types of yoga breathing mimics the sort of laughter of what your rib cage does, you know, and it's supposed to have this healing quality. So yeah, that it in a grander scheme of things, you know, it affects that system.
That's well said. You're right. I'm putting together this remote coaching right now for my patients, and I'm coming up with four pillars of health. And two are common sense, nutrition and fitness. But the other two are just, they're fundamental. They're probably the most fundamental, sleep and breathing.
Mm-hmm.
But we just push it under the rug. We don't talk about it enough. Yet I think those are the most two important.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start talking about those with patients. You're right. We just, it's so fundamental and rudimentary. We don't talk about it. We're like, oh, I breathe. I'm fine. I'm alive. But how are you breathing?
Yeah.
You know, this could change your physiology and how you function and perform throughout the day. So that was well said. Okay. So let's talk about you a little bit here. How can listeners hear more about your community classes and connect with you online?
So my online presence is dismal, but I do have one. I am on Facebook and people can find me through just France McCloskey. My name is France, but it's short for Francis. So I actually have two identities on there. I won't go into why, but so you can find me on either, but the most effective is France McCloskey. And then I do have a website. It's www.learnandmotivate.com. It is not the most stellar website. I am working on that. I'm also on Instagram, and I believe that's just France McCloskey. I may be on TikTok soon. That sort of scares me.
Nice.
I'm not quite even sure, but I also work as an English as a second language student with refugees and immigrants, and I have one of my former students who's on TikTok, and I'm like, you got to teach me about this. I'm trying to think. I'm on LinkedIn, and then I am actively doing brain fitness classes with Penfield Rec Center. So I have two classes running right now. One's the Inexplicable Brain, where we talk about kind of these amazing things. The last one we talked about was don't touch your face, and like why we're so it's so hard to not touch your face. And then the other one is Creative Brain and how to tap into your creativity. And all of these things help improve memory. They help improve cognition and those sorts of things. And then we're going to maybe do the laughter in the brain one in the future. I just love talking about these topics. And usually when somebody's done with my classes, there's almost more questions than there are answers, but that's the point, is to really be thinking about all of these things and to understand. So part of my classes is to understand the elevated language of cognitive science and neuroscience, and to be able to use that information in a meaningful way. So we kind of, it's this relaxed atmosphere. A lot of people will say they expect my first class to be kind of stuffy and boring. And then they're like, there's so much laughter in the classes. So I appreciate that feedback from them too. I'm not everyone's cup of tea, but those classes are fun. So right now I'm with Penfield Rec. I have done classes throughout the Rochester area. I've done them at Irondequoit and Brighton and Parrington. It's just, there's no online platform yet with them that I'm aware of. So I will most likely be doing a New York Humanities Grant class. And I can't fully remember the name, but it has to do with like neuroplasticity in the brain, which means the ability for the brain to change itself and improve. Because I have worked in the stories of miracles and I've seen people make these miraculous things. And I do want to say this one thing. If somebody can come back from a catastrophic car accident and they weren't able to walk and now they're able to walk and they did all these amazing things, often we look at that person and go, look what they did. That's amazing. That's a miraculous story. And I go, well, what does that then mean for you and what you can do and what you can put your mind to make those changes? Everybody has the capacity to do that. And if anything, that person had a much harder road to do. The only difference is that was their only choice. you have 6,000 things pulling you in different directions. But if you make it your focus, you can make the change, and it doesn't matter what age you are.
I love that. Inspiration is powerful.
Yeah.
It can be powerful, and it should be powerful for sure.
Yeah.
Well, France, I think I'm really looking forward to taking one of your classes and workshops, or hopefully sooner rather than later. But
sure.
Looking forward to doing that. And I think you're a funny scientist. I really do. I think you're, I don't know you that well. I know we just met over the phone a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But I think you're funny. You got a dry sense of humor, and you made me laugh a few times today. So thank you.
Well, after you shared that you don't laugh enough, I should take that as a huge compliment.
Yes. You know what? My wife and I have been doing, when I found out I was going to have you on the podcast a few weeks ago, we've been using Alexa more to tell us a joke.
Oh, yeah.
And she's pretty good jokes. Yeah.
Ask her what the meaning of life is. Or ask her what her favorite ice cream is. Like, I did that. I want to say I was at a yoga retreat, and I got into my Windows phone conversation. And I'm like, what am I doing on a yoga retreat talking to my phone? And I was like, what does the cow say? And it's like, moo. You know, it was talking with me. I'm like, I've gone insane. Go ahead. So, yeah, Alexa, you can go ask.
Alexa's good. Yeah. Well, I'm going to finish today with one final dad joke that I heard from Alexa today. This morning, actually, we went to the Birdsong Fairy Trails. Have you ever been there?
No, I want to go.
Oh, it was so cool. Highly recommend it. So I have a Harry Potter joke in reference for that. So why did the wizard get a job as a chef?
I don't know.
Nothing. Because he was good at sorcery.
Nice. Yep, that's a dad joke. There's my.
I can work on it. Yeah. I will, but that was not bad for today.
Yeah.
Well, France, I got one final question for you. If you have a friend coming to Rochester who has never been here, where are you taking them?
So it depends on where they're coming from and what their interests are. But my go-tos, of course, is Gucci Wegmans in Pittsburgh. Because of course Wegmans, and I have to laugh. I'm like, yep, we're going to go to a grocery store. Woohoo. And then, I love the Strong Museum of Play. I am a teacher by art. That's my talent. And so I love the words, and through one of the main entrances where it's learning through play. I think that's universal to any age. And then I walk on the Riverway Trail. I live in the South Wedge, and I love that part of Rochester, and I've really come across some discoveries. But I would also do I know wine tours are kind of the thing in the Finger Lakes, but there's actually cheese tours. So I would take someone on a cheese tour because they're a little less, I don't want to say populated, but they just seem, there can be more of a personalized experience, especially if I'm taking somebody who's from another country. They can kind of meet people. Of course, Letchworth and Watkins Glen, those areas. And then locally in Rochester, as far as like, I love Artisan Works and Village Gate. I kind of like the avant-garde type of areas. So yeah.
There's a lot to do in Rochester. That's a great answer. There's a lot of good food, a lot of good hiking, a lot of good outdoor stuff.
Yeah.
Well, France, I really appreciate your time. I know you have another class here in about 15 minutes.
Yes.
So I'm going to wrap things up here.
Thank you.
But I appreciate you, and I appreciate your brain and sharing your knowledge today and your humor and everything. So thank you again.
So I'm going to say I was tickled to be here. Thank you.
Nice. Well, thanks for listening to today's episode, guys. I hope you gained a lot of value and will share this with family and friends to spread the wealth of knowledge that France gave us today. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can join me next time with a new local guest in the health and wellness space. I hope you're having an amazing day, and I'll talk with you soon. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, I'm Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Are you dealing with aches and pains on a daily basis? I'm here to tell you that it does not have to be like that. I want to help you get out of pain. I want to help you solve your problems. I want to unravel what happened in the past to lead to where you're at now. So if that's you and you have questions about your health, call me, text me, email me, go to my website, driscollchiropracticny.com, read a little bit more about myself and my approach. You can call or text 585-672-3870. You can email me info@driscollchiropracticny.com. You can find me on Facebook, Driscoll Chiropractic NY, or on Instagram,
at dr.driscoll. One more thing, guys, if you don't mind popping over to Apple Podcast Reviews and leaving me a 5-star review or any star, it doesn't matter. It's just feedback for me. And the goal and the mission of this podcast is to reach more people and to help more people. So thanks again, guys, for listening. It means the world to me. Buckle up. I got some great guests lined up. Talk to you soon.